And welcome back again, everybody, to Hoops HD for our very first Championship Week video notebook of the season, coming to you about 10 minutes after we just finished our bracket racket. We decided that we hadn't done enough, so we needed more, which is what March is all about for college basketball fans. With us again is David Griggs and Lee Delvecchio. How are we doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Anything interesting happened to you guys in the last 10 minutes? I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, for anybody that missed our bracket racket, but what we want to do here, just quickly, we want to talk about, this is our Championship Week video notebook segment. We are going to be each night reviewing each conference tournament game that occurs and previewing the following day. Since obviously no conference tournament games happen today, we're just going to do a preview. And we have three conferences kicking things off tomorrow night, Tuesday night. And the only conference that has its top seed in action is the Atlantic Sun, which you can see already on Lee's screen there. Our four games, North Florida is going to be hosting Stetson. Gulf Coast is going to be hosting Jacksonville. Upstate is going to be hosting Kennesaw. And Northern Kentucky will be hosting Lipscomb. David, let's start with you. What are your thoughts about this tournament and who you think is going to win? And can we have any upsets tomorrow?
I could see Lipscomb going on to NKU and winning. First of all, congrats to NKU playing in their first ever conference tournament game, hosting their first ever conference tournament game. Still a transitional team. I'm not sure how I feel about this because if they win the tournament, essentially what would happen if they're in the conference championship game, it would be a meaningless game. But for them, I'm glad they get the experience to try and win a conference championship. I've been real impressed with Matt Driscoll in North Florida this year. I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of them, but they get out there. They finish first in the league. I thought it was going to be Gulf Coast, and I just thought they would sprint so far ahead of everyone else it wouldn't even be worth watching. But here's North Florida finishing first and with home court advantage all throughout. I think it's going to play out to where it's Gulf Coast against North Florida at North Florida. And I honestly see Gulf Coast getting it done. But what a season North Florida has had. I believe it's they have advanced to the ASUN championship game before. But is this North Florida up on the screen? But since they completed, I think since they've been Division I, this is the best year they've ever had in their history. It's their first ever first place finish. Great job by Matt Driscoll this year.
Right, and they swept Gulf Coast on the season. That's how they clinched how they won the ASUN tournament. And Lee, David mentioned this. There's this weird thing here with Northern Kentucky, who's not eligible for the NCAA tournament, yet could win the ASUN tournament. And if they do so, whoever they beat in the championship game will be the automatic bid winner. What are your thoughts on that? This is the SWAC rule from last year. ASUN picked it up. What are your thoughts on this?
I actually like it. What it allows is for a full court storming guaranteed in the championship game. Because, if North Kentucky wins, like, they're storming. And Florida Gulf Coast, I say screw it. I storm anyway. The fans go up, they'll find it. First of all, yeah, Northern Kentucky would be at Florida Gulf Coast. So their 30 fans come on the court. The Florida Gulf Coast fans, I would love it if Dunk City stormed. I want a simultaneous storm.
That would be great to see a court storming by the losing team. Northern Kentucky beat them because they just got the bid.
I actually do like it. I want to give the ASUN a lot of credit here because they didn't have to do this. And, you know, we all know about the upheaval with like the Big Ten and the SEC with conference realignment. But the stuff that only like guys like us three and the folks listening know about are the effects that came down the line to conferences like the Atlantic Sun. And you got to a point where you did a thing like, you know, Northern Kentucky, this is a transitional team. This is not a Division I team that they added. And this is a team that has been way better than I think anyone expected. Ever since they've started the transition, they've been very impressive. This year, they were middle of the pack ASUN, which is a tremendous performance for them. I think it's awesome that they get the chance. I think it's cool that the kids, especially because they've had a good year. I would feel less good about it if they were like the 8 seed because what it does is, by having them in, instead of North Florida and Gulf Coast just getting byes, it changes everything by having them in the tournament. It makes the bracket easier. It's a straight 1 versus 8, as you see on your screen. But if they weren't in, It's a ballsy move by the Atlantic Sun, because it's another game that North Florida and Florida Gulf Coast have to win to get through. Like, I mean, it's unlikely that they lose, either of them lose at home. You know, I love the Hatters for their logo, but they're not very good at basketball. I mean, they're really bad. And Jacksonville's not good either. But you know, weird things happen. And so the A-Sun doing this, I mean, this is a huge risk for them, because this is inviting them to have a team playing in Dayton. You know, because if it's not North Florida or Florida Gulf Coast, I feel kind of confident in saying that. I don't know what you guys feel about upstate, but I really like North Florida a lot, for what you alluded to. We know about the pedigree with Gulf Coast. I think North Florida is a clear cut above this year, as proven by the fact that they went into DeLand and won by pretty comfortably by like 15. But by having Northern Kentucky in this year, it gives those kids a chance to really experience it, especially feel good for the seniors who have been part of being thrown into a much higher level of basketball than what they might have expected to begin with. Yeah. Right. And they play very well. And, hey, they get to host a game. How cool is that? Who's not a fan of it? North Florida, probably not happy with this. It's Florida Gulf Coast, not happy. As I mentioned, they have to play an extra game. Lipscomb, really not happy. They've got to go on the road as opposed to hosting Stetson. They now have to go to Northern Kentucky.
Right. Well, if you eliminate Northern Kentucky here, Lipscomb would have ended up hosting Kennesaw. Gulf Coast would have been hosting Stetson. I'm sorry, Upstate would have been hosting Jacksonville. Gulf Coast would have been hosting Stetson. North Florida would have had a bye.
Wait, wouldn't they have done one and two, both get byes, just to make it easier?
Oh, they might have, I was just assuming a 17 bracket there.
I was assuming with a 17 bracket they would – oh, yeah, that would make it five. You're right. All right. I still maintain that North Florida, Florida Gulf Coast, and Lipscomb are probably not thrilled with the commissioner for the next.
They signed off on it. The conference had to approve it, and they did. It was the membership that approved this.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Look, they might say it was unanimous. I bet this was contentious.
Yeah.
I'm really interested by. I don't know if the entire A-Sun, and I know that Chad, you're going to do your usual awesome job with the streaming guide. If the entire A-Sun is on ESPN3,
it is actually ESPN3. Jacksonville became the best team this year to get their full ESPN3 programming on-campus facilities up and running. So every A-Sun game, not only in the tournament, but every A-Sun game next year and in the foreseeable future will all be on ESPN3. ESPN has the full rights to the entire Atlantic Sun.
Which tells me that ESPN probably said, look, if you do a tournament with Northern Kentucky in it, that's, what, three more games probably?
It's at least one more game, yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about a ton of money here, but with the margins being what they are, I guarantee the A-Sun gets more money by having more postseason games.
Right.
So at the end of the day, that's why they did it. But I'll sit here and pretend they did it just to be nice to Northern Kentucky. I expect Northern Kentucky to win tomorrow night. I think it's an awesome story. I think they've done – in fact, all of the teams that have transitioned recently have done a really good job of it.
They really have. Yeah.
And I've been really impressed. And it's funny because the last thing we need – and I stand by it. The last thing we needed were more D1 teams. But Grand Canyon, very impressive, great attendance. Going back farther, Northern Colorado, and please, for the love of God, David Griggs, do not start a Tim Miles thing here.
When he was at North Dakota State, they moved up. And Tim Miles was awesome.
I was confusing the two. I know Northern Colorado moved up recently.
North Dakota State also, though, was a transitional team not that long ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we saw what North Dakota State did with Nader's going to Nate and the whole thing. And Northern Kentucky, just another in the line of programs, moving up to Division I and fitting in well. And from watching them, I don't think it's just the thinning of the herd, necessarily. I do think these are teams that are like, they're not good teams, but they're not embarrassingly bad. I mean, they're competitive. They're very competitive very early, and I think tomorrow night is an awesome night for Northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, Chad, it makes the whole thing a kind of a pain in the ass. The title game could be meaningless, but besides me joking about a simultaneous storm, like, I think it's really great. I like it for tomorrow night. I like that Northern Kentucky gets a home game in a quote unquote meaningful environment.
I'll tell you that is the game I'm most excited about watching, just because of that environment that hopefully they should have there, or the fans they should have there with that first conference tournament game. The game I think is most likely for an upset tomorrow night. This South Carolina Upstate team has not been playing well. Kennesaw only lost them by 3 on the road earlier at Upstate earlier in the year. Yep. That's the game I'm pegging for my upset tomorrow night. But again, I agree it's going to become North Florida Gulf Coast in the end, and I think Gulf Coast finds a way to win on the road, and North Florida would have to beat Gulf Coast 3 times in the same year, and I just don't think they can.
All right.
Let's move on now to the Horizon League up next. The top seeds are not yet in action, but we do have the two called pre-play-in games at campus sites. Right.
So what we have here, we have a first round, a quarterfinal of 6 teams, a semi of 4 teams. What is this? I guess this is a ladder.
This is the definition of a ladder tournament right here.
Yeah, Valparaiso gets the top seed, Green Bay the second seed, Cleveland State and Oakland the 3 and the 4 seeds. The only team playing tomorrow night that I think I think this Detroit team is a sleeper in this tournament. They are playing. They should pound Youngstown State tomorrow night. Can they beat Cleveland State and Valpo and then make it to the championship game? It's kind of a tough road there for them. But, they got Juwan Howard Jr. there. He was a pretty good player. So I do like that Detroit team.
Just real quick, one of the things I love about this tournament, first of all, we would normally have 3 opening round games or first round games. Wisconsin-Milwaukee, not eligible. I love, if you've been following under the radar, we both do, how this league is on campus sites, so you get exciting environments all throughout, and how well they protect the first place team. How exciting was this league down the stretch with 4 teams log jammed all the way at the top that could have won it, and then Valpo pulling it out the way that they did?
Yeah, Cleveland State, who ended up finishing 4th, was 1 win away from being in first place. That's how close it was.
Yeah.
Incredibly close. I really don't have much to say about tomorrow's games. I mean, yeah. Let me tell you this. The top 4 and bottom 4 stratification in the Horizon is American Conference-esque. There's some bad teams down here. And I don't think any of the teams tomorrow has a chance. I like Oakland. I'm a huge Greg Campy fan. If you're trying to look at a team that might need to be careful, I think Oakland will have a harder time with UIC or Wright State than Cleveland State will have with Detroit or Youngstown. Because like you said, Cleveland State's a somewhat misleading 4 seed. This bracket, by the way, this reminds me, I believe this is the structure the West Coast Conference uses with the double lot.
Not anymore. They got rid of it. They went back to a standard bracket, but they used to for a while.
Yeah.
This sort of bracket system has been used historically by conferences absolutely terrified of teams that they think are at-large teams but know can't get an at-large losing. So this is a bracket setup that you use when you want to protect the hell out of your top teams. And I think it's interesting the Horizon used it just because I think the top 4 are so close. Like, I really don't think that there has barely been any chatter on Valpo as an at-large team. I don't think there's a chance. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on it, but like,
I like this Valpo team. I don't know if they don't have the paper. I love them on the court. But I gotta say, Lee, even though the 4 seeds were really close, I think having this format made the season that much more exciting. Yes, it's about protecting your first place team, but I think it's about rewarding as much as it is protecting. And it made those, like, in the final week of the season, when you had 4 games gridlocked, it made those games really exciting.
Yeah, and it actually is exciting when you have teams, like multiple teams fighting for, like the West Coast Conference, it was so transparent because, God, below Gonzaga, there was one other team, but you usually weren't getting 4 deep in the West Coast. But in the Horizon, you had 4 teams, so you had legit fights for a double bye. I mean, Cleveland State playing that extra game is a huge deal.
I'll tell you, the other conference that does the same format that it's going to be crazy in, they're not done yet, is the Mid-American. They do this format, and you right now have 6 teams that 2 of them are going to end up with only needing 2 wins, and one of them is going to end up needing to win 5 games to win that tournament. Yeah,
the only difference is that's at a predetermined site.
Yeah.
Cleveland, I'll tell you, folks, Don't think that LeBron brought the energy of basketball back to Cleveland. The Mac has been doing it for years. Because we don't know who they are. But this is, I mean, you want to talk about glorious bracket structuring. I mean,
There are triple, not double buys, triple buys here in the Mac. It's crazy. Yeah.
That's art, damn it. Yeah. And before we move on to the, or you probably want to pick, you mentioned the, David mentioned the on-campus atmosphere. It's great. Another thing that I'm a fan of is that the America East tournament, which starts on Wednesday, I believe this might be the second year they've done that. I think it's the first though. America East first year completely on campus, no brainer, smart move. Going to be a lot of exciting atmospheres. Oh my God, I can't wait for tomorrow night. I'm actually going to be discussing University of New Hampshire basketball in a relevant capacity. It's unbelievable. What they've done in New Hampshire this year is an act of God. It's unbelievable the job they've done.
Very quickly, I'm picking Valpo to win the Horizon. How about the two of you?
Valpo, all day long.
Green Bay should be better. Green Bay
should
be.
They've been really disappointing, yeah.
But they've been disappointing. I don't know. I'm going to take Green Bay just to be contrarian and say they finally wake up.
All right, let's move on to the Patriot League now, where we have the rivalry game in the first round, perhaps the game of the night here, Army-Navy in the 7-10 game at 7 o'clock. Any excitement about this game?
Is this not a game, or is this on?
Just it's going to be streamed, and that's
it. Yeah, Patriot League website.
Okay.
This is, again, on campus all the way, another conference that does it right. This is an Army team that I, for a minute, thought was going to win this conference, and they still could.
I did too. You know,
I don't know. This one's going to be fun. And again, I've been around the game. I've been around this level, and when you go into a tournament. Into a game like this, you're not really thinking about winning it. You're looking at your seniors and you're looking at your guys and you're like, let's just play so we can play again tomorrow. And again, you're going to see, as meaningless as the Holy Cross Loyola game or the Army-Navy game may appear to be, you're going to see a lot of fight and a lot of spirit, even though it's the opening round and even though both teams probably know that they're probably not going to get in.
Oh, it's Army-Navy. It will look like a national championship. There is going to be fighting. There is going to be – that game is going to be balls to the wall exciting. I've actually been to Navy's arena before. Navy, this is a team that started off the year very nearly – probably should have beaten Michigan State.
Yes.
The Navy. Now, I know Michigan State's had kind of a weird year, and that was when they were really weird early in the season. But this is a Navy team that's capable of really playing up to the level of competition. They've shown that. And tomorrow night, I know Army looked good earlier in the season, but, I mean, Navy at home, the atmosphere is going to be unbelievable.
Yes, it will. I'm glad you mentioned the atmosphere, Lee. The way this conference works is it isn't sort of like season tickets. The tournament games aren't really true home games. It's two-thirds, one-third. Army is getting a third of the tickets. This is going to be an unbelievable atmosphere tomorrow.
Yes, and they will be all cadets.
Yeah.
Army doesn't really have a lot of civilian fans, and they will give them all to cadets. And Navy's entire student body, the way it works in the academies, is there are certain sporting events. Actually, I mean, like, all football games and certain basketball and hockey games where, like, it's mandatory attendance. I can assure you that tomorrow night, the entire Naval Academy student body and 1,300 members of the Army or the Military Academy student body will be in the same building at the same time. And holy shit, is that going to be awesome.
This is destination television. Well, destination streaming.
Let's take a quick picks here of who you each think are going to win this Patriot League tournament in the end of the day here. Because this was a conference with a ton of parity all season long.
Well, I picked American in my preseason as my preseason favorites. And actually had them in my preseason UTR top 10. They finished sixth.
Good pick.
This is almost impossible to pick. I guess I got to go with Bucknell just because of where they are and the fact that they have the home court advantage throughout.
Right. My pick here, actually, I'm going to go with a 3 seed here, Lehigh. I think they've been playing as good as anybody else in this conference recently, and I do not trust this Colgate team. I think that Lehigh can beat American in the quarterfinals, can beat Colgate in the semis. And maybe they get a little bit of help and have somebody else knock off Bucknell so they can get a home game for the title.
Wait, hold on. You don't like this Colgate team? I mean, they're only one game worse than Kansas State. I mean, they're 15 and 16 overall. I'm actually going with Colgate. They didn't really do much out of non-conference. I don't know. I'm just trying
Nobody did in this conference. Nobody.
I feel like Colgate, they're going to be getting whoever comes out of that Army-Navy game, the emotional baggage of that. I mean, there'll be a few days off. And I also think that, like, I don't think American's going to win tomorrow, right? Or win their first game. I think Lehigh's going to win the first game.
Oh, I think they will, too.
Right, exactly. So the Colgate's road is going to be an Army or Navy team that is going to have to emotionally deal with a way less intense game, even though it's more important. And then American, or then Lehigh, who's a team Colgate can beat. And then, meanwhile, I mean, Bucknell on the other end has a much tougher road. BU is a better team than fifth in this conference. BU is a team to keep an eye on. I think Colgate gets to the final, and Bucknell as well. I think Colgate can win at Bucknell. They only got to do it once. Okay. I'm going with Colgate.
Fair enough. All right. Well, those are the games tomorrow. So tomorrow night we'll go back and just review the games that did happen. We've also previewed the games that are coming up on Wednesday with a few more conferences that will be kicking off in those days. A couple more things we want to do here. We want to fill in, David, I know you want to talk about a couple other teams that we did not get to in the Bracket Racket podcast. So let me turn it over to you. Who else did you want to discuss very briefly here?
Okay, going down the list, and again, we can only spend a minute. We talked about Dayton a little bit, but right. Maybe a little more on them. And VCU, again, the injury, they're only 4-5 since losing his name is
Briante Weber.
Yeah, and since losing Weber. Where are they going? That's one of the things. And then out in the Pac-12, we need to probably at least touch on that. Gonzaga losing over the weekend, we talked about it at the top, but I don't see them getting back up on the one line. In fact, we can probably just leave Gonzaga at that. We already talked about them in BYU. And the other big game, Wichita State, Northern Iowa. I guess let's just start there. Can one or both of these teams end up as protected seeds?
I still like Northern Iowa better than Wichita State despite the loss. I know that they moved above Wichita State in all the polls following the loss, but I think it's really because the pollsters look at what did you do for me yesterday and not what did you do for me all season. Such is the reason why Murray State's in the polls right now, which makes zero sense.
Now, is Murray State, I got to ask again.
Before you say that, I just want to say Chad said everything I was going to say about Northern Iowa. I totally agree. Yeah. I like Northern Iowa more.
I like Northern Iowa, too. The one thing that's interesting about them, their paper is weak. We saw Lee's S-curve. We saw what SMU is better than their paper, and we saw what he thought of them. Well, these teams have weak paper, so would it be out of left field if the committee landed them on the 5th, 6th line even though that I think they're 4-seed caliber teams?
I don't think so. I could see that happening because at the end of the day, the paper's weak. You know, I mean, don't look at it as their paper being weak. It's going to be the teams that they're going against. If they bump up like a Big 12 team above them, I mean, whoever it is, the Big 12 team, unless it's, you know, Kansas State, the paper's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I see, as we sit here right now, as Northern Iowa is a 4 and Wichita is a 5. The only way that flips is if Wichita beats Northern Iowa. I mean, these two teams are probably playing each other again next Sunday in the Missouri Valley Championship game, so that could be the tiebreaker there.
Right.
At that point, Wichita State takes 2 out of 3. I will have to put them above you and I, but not till then.
I'll say this. It's great for the Missouri Valley that they even have this. Remember with Creighton's departure, there was this fear that, oh, God, it's like, are they going to be able to have, you know, two elite-level teams again? And they've shown they can. Creighton's fallen apart. And, I mean, I want Northern Iowa, Wichita State 3 so badly, just as a fan. It would be awesome.
All right. Lee, we mentioned Murray State. What's your take on the fact that this is now a top 25 team in both polls?
My thoughts are that we should take the polls and send them out to sea and not give them any provisions and thank them for their time. And I'm not saying I don't really believe in a team who has one top 100 win as being Murray State.
They only have two top 100 losses. They only played 3 games. Okay, I legitimately believe Murray State is a top 50 team, probably a top 40 team. I think they're a 10 or 11 seed caliber team. Their paper is lousy minus their ranking. But they didn't play anybody in the top 100.
It's not lousy. It's earned. Look, they played 30 games. 23 of the 30 are bottom 150. I mean,
that's horrible. I mean, that's atrocious.
Even Notre Dame didn't do that, and God knows they tried. 23 of 30 games against the bottom half of Division One.
And part of that's conference, but only part of it. This team did not get out and schedule anybody.
You didn't get out and schedule anybody, and the OVC was awful this year, too. On top of that, the next best team is RPI 145 Belmont. That's the only team that's in the top half of Division One.
Belmont from 3 years ago, Belmont.
No, this is a bad. This is a very.
Can I also say, and we said this back in July, it wasn't as if Murray State was unaware that they were going to be this good. They gave themselves no shots to prove themselves anyway.
Yeah, it's weird. I think they really, with the recent history, they really just thought, with the schedule they had, going undefeated was unlikely in the regular season, but it wasn't crazy. No. Illinois State is their best win. I'm not even going to continue.
I'll put it this way. They are 26-4. They could have won two more games. They could have beaten Portland and Houston, and I still would not consider them a top 25 team.
I know. That's the thing. They lost to Houston. Like, and that might be the best team they've played. Like, they're so bad.
Yeah. Now,
Houston, by the way, I'm getting their second conference win. You kind of appreciate that.
Now, Prom's first year, when they got up to number six in the polls, that team went to Memphis and won. Like that team played four or five really good teams on the road and beat them all. This team didn't play anybody.
Yeah, that team stretched its challenged itself to the degree that was reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they were really overseeded and overrated and all that, but like I was glad – I thought they were a good team and I was rooting for them. I just thought the paper was so weak. But it wasn't like this. This tells you institutionally which way they lean. This is more of the Stu Morrill school of thought versus the Tim Kluse school of thought in terms of scheduling. This is the we're just going to run up a gaudy record and – metrics be damned. We know that the common media will just see 26-4 and won't put in the research and won't put in the effort. They apparently forget that the NCAA uses computers. And they're going to find out the hard way if they don't win the OVC tournament.
No, I don't think they're going anywhere but the NIT in the OVC tournament.
Yeah, they're going to fall out of the rankings, and then there's nothing there.
They win the OVC to get an NIT. Like, the only reason they're making the NIT is they have the auto bid. I really wouldn't even have picked them for the NIT.
I think I would have picked them for the NIT without that. But I think they'll be a top four seed in the NITs. But I don't think we need to do a show about the seeding in the NIT. So.
The
Pac-12, real quick. I know we talked a little bit about Arizona. Any further comments about them? And then I want to talk about the bubble at the bottom of it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with their win at Utah. I thought it was as good as Arizona has been. I thought it was maybe their best win of the year. I don't see them getting up to the one line quite like I think Lee had them up there, but I really like this Arizona team. That Utah isn't, in my opinion, as good as their ranking, but at home they are. And that is not an easy game to win, and they win in there.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I mean, Arizona was my preseason pick to cut down the nets, and I've seen nothing from them. I've seen nothing yet that has made me say I'm absolutely wrong there, so I'm going to stick to my guns here even. But I don't think they're a one-seed profile with the three bad losses.
They do have the three bad losses. I'm still a big fan of them. I was really impressed with what they did at the Huntsman.
Yeah, and we say bad, we mean bad by one-seed standards. Those really weren't bad.
They weren't bad. It's so tough this year. It's really a really impressive crop at the top. It's better than we've had in the last few years. So that makes me feel better about the sport. And everybody does is talk about what's wrong with it. I hate to sound like Mike DeCourcy here, but at least the top level feels really better this year than it has in recent past. The win at Utah was impressive to me for Arizona. As somebody who likes Arizona's profile more than you two do, but at the same time, Utah—they were up seven with five to go. Utah, you got to close that out. You want to lock up a protected seed? You got to close that out. I still think Utah is a protected seed, but I was really disappointed with the way they finished that game.
I'll tell you, I agree with you. Utah's in the protected seed range, but I'm not a fan of the Utah profile. Really, they've beaten Wichita State at home, and that's it. When you really look at it, they just did nothing bad, and most of their work has been in that 51 to 100 range. Yes. But they, I mean, all the metrics like them, all the numbers like them. Their strength of schedule is good. Their RPI is very good, and that's what's going to get them in probably a 4 seed.
They're funny because they're the same sort of thing happens with Northern Iowa, but it's different because Northern Iowa doesn't play as tough of a schedule overall.
Utah's best, in the Pac-12. That's the difference.
Yeah. Utah's best BPI performance was their home win over UCLA, 71-39. Their worst BPI performance was losing by 10 at UCLA. So that sums Utah up to me. Like, that sums them up to me. I mean, their worst performance I saw was allowing Arizona to finish on like a 25-8 run at home. Like, that was so frustrating to me. Utah was there to cement that they're really a contender in that top 25 teams in the sport sort of thing, as a team to really that can do something. To just fall apart at home like that with a great crowd was just so disappointing to see. But this is also a Utah team that's played 12 games without their full roster. I mean, they've balanced injuries all year, Utah.
Yeah,
and that's why I think that's part of why the metrics. I mean, that's why the BPI likes them, because the BPI values that, and I think that's why a lot of people are in the media are aware of the injuries. That's why I like them. 22-6 with the injuries they've had. 12-4 in the Pac-12. I like this Utah team. I don't like them as much as Arizona. I think their schedule was pretty strong. They didn't have their schedule is a lot stronger than it's been in the past when they've had really bad teams. Utah's a program that definitely schedules to the team they think they'll have. So that's why I want them to be good, because when they aren't good, we laugh at them.
Okay, let's move on to the bubble here.
Oregon.
Real quick. I think, my opinion, Oregon is in. UCLA and Stanford are out right now, but UCLA is probably as close to the borderline as anybody in the country.
Can we kill Stanford? I mean, since we're they're trying to kill themselves, can we just put them on, like, pull the life support plug and just be done with it?
And you know, in the last podcast, you asked me big wins over the weekend. I think Oregon's win at Stanford was as big as anybody else on the bubble this weekend.
Yeah, I actually have – I had UCLA and Stanford both on the bubble, both in my last four in.
Yes, because you were on crack.
Stanford, like
– as evidenced by the previous podcast.
That was as of yesterday. I am fully confident that Stanford is going to lose a game remaining to knock themselves out. That's how I feel about Stanford.
Well, Stanford's remaining schedule is at the Arizona school. So first they got to go up against the Current of Destruction.
They're going to lose both of those.
Thursday, and then at Arizona. So, yeah.
I mean, actually, no. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to lose at Arizona State, and they're going to win at Arizona. And I don't want to
just to annoy me. That's the only right motivation they will have.
This Oregon team, I've been impressed. It's tough because I really don't like rooting for them for non-basketball reasons. Like, I think Dana Altman is really been pretty disgraceful. What's going on with that program? It's really disgraceful stuff. And I don't need John Rothstein to tweet about what the adversity they overcame. What, you mean players being academically ineligible and being accused of sexual assault? That's not adversity, okay? Adversity is losing a player due to an injury. Adversity is having an unbalanced schedule affect you. It's not adversity when you're committing things.
Adversity is like when your family gets thrown out of their house.
Yeah. Then please, let's not talk about Oregon. Like, they've overcome things that are their own fault. Serious, serious problems. Like Donnie Tindall and Dana Altman might both get fired for things that have nothing to do with basketball in the next couple of weeks. But this Oregon team, I've been impressed. I thought this year was going to be a complete disaster for them for the reasons we mentioned. They had a million things off the court that were completely their own fault. Somehow they found a way to ignore them and play pretty good basketball. And you know what? I think that they're going to have a hard time getting it. I actually like their profile the least of these three teams. But I think they're the least that I don't. I mean, I trust them more than Stanford. Like, they're at least consistent. Stanford, God only knows. Like, once you get Stanford out,
They're consistently bad, Stanford.
Yeah. No, but they can be hot and cold. Like, Oregon, you know what you're getting with Oregon. And I just don't think they're going to have enough at the end of the day on the resume, Oregon, to get in.
Okay. Well, let's quickly go over to the Atlantic 10 here. We're almost out of time. And David, you mentioned this VCU. We also had a little bit of talk earlier about Archie Miller and the incredible job he's done at Dayton.
Amazing. VCU again. It's just they haven't been at full strength, and I believe they're only 4-5 since then. So how does the committee read that? And again, the big win that Dayton had over the weekend, huge. I think like it basically cements them inside the bubble, and what a great win! What a capstone moment for a season that Dayton has had nothing go right. They've had adversity. Well, granted, part of it was their fault. They lost two key players earlier in the year. They basically have a six-man rotation, no front court, just really limited personnel. And they have a chance to win finish first place in the conference, I think, since they joined the Atlantic 10. An unbelievable story going on right there.
Right.
I alluded to it. It's the best coaching job anybody is doing in America this year.
I agree. You know, we had a podcast last week, David, where you told me that if Dayton won this game at VCU, Archie Miller should be coach of the year, and I agreed with you. They won it, so he's got my vote.
I don't know how they've done it. I've started to wonder if he's a better coach than his brother, just because he's done, his brother's a great coach, but I mean, what he's done this year is tougher than anything.
It's one of the things I wanted to get to. The Atlantic 10, as good as the top of the league is, it really is underexposed. I don't know why. The teams are in big cities. It is their own fault for a lot of reasons. We'll talk about this again here in a couple of weeks, our State of the Union of College Basketball. The television deal is not good. I don't think people realize around the country how well supported this Dayton team is. I mean, more than 12,000 people every night. And when I say that, in college basketball, if you're a tournament caliber team or if you're in the rankings, you got big crowds. Dayton has had 12,000 people even when their team was lousy.
Yeah.
And to see that, I mean, last year when they went to the Elite Eight, and to see that run and the excitement and the passion around that program, it really is special. They had more resources than just about anybody else in the Atlantic 10, especially with Xavier being gone, yet they continued to finish in the middle of the pack or below. It didn't make any sense. They finally turned it around. Yet they still sort of are under the radar because of that lack of exposure. But this is a great story. I mean, the excitement that fan base that has never really had a lot of success before, at least not since.
Well, I mean, they had tremendous success in the. I mean, they have the most history of anybody in the conference, really.
Well, but and since the field went to 64, how about that?
Okay, yeah, no, that's different.
In recent years, they're not. Lee. I want to turn to you for one other team in the Atlantic 10 that we would be remiss if we don't discuss, and that's the Davidson Wildcats.
Yeah, this is the Davidson team all year. Like, I actually think they've been a bigger victim of how awful the media deal is because.
Well, what about the strength of schedule here? This 2:34 non-conference.
not great. Dayton, by the way, tons of fans at the tournament in Puerto Rico where UConn and West Virginia were. The thing for Dayton, I'm going to get to Davidson, don't worry. The thing that really can, like, not that I needed any selling, but that sold me even more on Dayton as a program was last year when they played Syracuse in Buffalo and, like, the crowd was 60-40. It wasn't 80-20 Syracuse. Dayton, the fans, that's not a long drive for them. They got on the bus, and they had a ton of fans there, and they made a lot of noise. That really got my attention. Dayton has unbelievable fans. Folks, there's a reason the NCAA tournament puts the first four there and why they fight for it and why they continue to upgrade the facilities and the way they treat teams when they get out there. They packed that place in to watch terrible teams that are in the, quote, NCAA tournament. They're watching SWAC teams playing Southland teams. They're watching teams.
So are we.
Yeah, but we're losers. Like, they're getting 12,000 people to watch these games and go nuts. It's awesome.
Well, there's a good segue to one team that might be there this year that's on your screen right now. How about that?
They played well at Virginia. They played well at VCU.
So we're arguing losses.
They won by 17. Now, they did beat Dayton by 17. That's the most impressive win, perhaps, I mean – Dave, you'd know this. Has anybody beaten Dayton that badly this year?
No.
UConn didn't. Not that they're great shakes. And this is a Davidson team that's finished the season very strong. They've won their last seven, including a sweep of a good George Washington team, a win at Rhode Island, which is really tough to do, they beat the crap out of terrible teams in Fordham and George Mason, which is what you're supposed to do. I think Davidson, I've been impressed by them this year just because I don't think anybody expected them to compete this well, this quickly in the A-10, including me. I thought they were a fish out of water. I thought they were going to have a really tough time being able to compete at the top end of the A-10. And this year they have taken on the big programs in this conference, and they've gone toe-to-toe with them. Their overall profile still sucks. I mean,
that's my big problem with them is
okay. Fair.
You've got one really quality win. You got two bad losses at the bottom of the resume, and I could talk. I could say there's an argument for you if you have a number 13 strength of schedule with that, but not a 131 strength of schedule, which is what they're at. And that's, they've got VCU at home this week. They pick up that win, it's a different story, maybe.
Well, wait. If they pick up that win, would they win the A-10 outright?
They're in a three-way tie right now, so they could still end up tied because VCU is not part of that tie.
I feel like my last thought is I agree with you. I have questions about them, but if they win the A-10 regular season, I think they're getting in.
David?
Oh yeah, I think they're getting in if they win the A-10 regular season.
What if they don't?
It's going to be close.
What if they lose this VCU game, win their last game, win a couple in the A-10?
I think that's enough. I mean, it depends on everything else works out, but I think that would be enough to get them in.
Well, I think the key for them is that in the A-10 play, they have the blowout over Dayton, and they've beaten the good teams. Like they didn't challenge themselves out of conference. I don't dispute that. I mean, it's weird saying that they went to they played at Virginia and they played at North Carolina, but the other end of the spectrum. I mean, there's no middle with their out of conference. Like they also played Stetson. You know, it's like you gotta have. Can you meet in the middle? That's what really did them in. Is they aimed really, really high, and they also scheduled Stetson and Charlotte. The back end of them is dragging them down because they weren't gonna beat North Carolina or win at Virginia. So at that point, you're really only gonna screw yourself by scheduling these bottom
50. Now, if Davidson loses this game to VCU this week, and if coming up tomorrow Tuesday night here. Rhode Island's at Dayton. Rhode Island picks up that win, beats St. Joe's over the weekend. Rhode Island wins the A-10 outright. What the hell do you do with them?
Well, I think
Rhode Island profile all year. This is a team that has played below what their talent level is. What do I do with them? I don't think they're in at that point.
No, they're not. And again, I think you just use the non-balanced schedule as an excuse, the way the Pac-12 did when Washington won it. And they're not in, even if they finish first outright.
I mean, this is a Rhode Island team that should have played better than they have. They're not in; it's their own fault. You can't lose to Georgia Tech this year if you really want to do something at large. The Providence game, I mean, God, Brown won there. So I mean, and since then, a close loss at UMass, you got to get that game. The close loss at St. Joe's, you got to get that game. Look at the margin of loss for them is the one thing I would say. I know that doesn't – we know that doesn't factor. But their last four losses have been by a total of 10 points. I mean, and that's since December – since the loss at Providence. They have lost four games by a total of 10 points. This is a very good basketball team, I think. I think they're one of the three best teams in the A-10 on talent. But they are not an at-large team, even if they win the A-10. I think that there's a difference between them and Davidson. I think Davidson's profile is better.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this Rhode Island team. They are in KenPom. They are the number 9 adjusted defense in the country and the number 200 offense. I mean, what a disparity there.
Yeah,
that's an Indiana-like disparity on the other end. That's there's somebody else who San Diego. It's San Diego State.
It is San Diego State.
It's lower mid-major level San Diego State, and they've really disappointed me this year, Rhode Island, because I really thought this was a borderline top 25 team all year, and it should have been. But the thing about them is they've steadied the ship somewhat. I mean, they lost to Davidson, they lost by one. I'm more impressed by Davidson. Davidson went into the Ryan Center and got out of there
huge win for him.
This is a team that's won 4 out of 5. Rhode Island's last two games at Dayton, you mentioned, and home for St. Joe's. They have the potential to really be on a roll going into the A-10 tournament and be a – I might pick them to win just because I know the team is that talented. But this year, I like Davidson's profile better right now, tonight.
Anything else we want to discuss? David, start with you. Any teams we missed here?
I think we got it all. It took us two tries, but we got it.
Lee, anything else?
We're at 44 minutes, by the way, so
that's short
for us.
So we got two nice podcasts. We will be back tomorrow night with our Championship Week video notebook. If there's anybody we missed tonight, we will spend a few minutes talking about them. Other than that, have a great night, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon.